I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Leaving a Legacy. We discover the origin of President's Day and learn more about the leader who started it all, George Washington. History on the Hill. Learn about the early days of the U.S. Capitol building and the role George Washington had in its construction. Freedom of religion. We take a look at measures the current administration is taking to fight for the founding belief of religious liberty. And special visitors. Learn about some of the presidents who traveled to the Vatican to meet with the Pope. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us for a special President's Day edition of EWTN News Nightly. Every year, Americans celebrate the legacy of two presidents, Abraham Lincoln and George Washington. We know it as President's Day. Originally, though, the holiday began as a way to formally recognize the nation's first president. George Washington was born on February 22, 1732. And while celebrations on his birthday still carry on to this day, the federal government moved the annual celebration of President's Day to the third Monday in February, regardless of the date. Our nation's first commander-in-chief left an important legacy on the United States through his leadership and wisdom on several issues, including religious liberty. EWTN News Nightly recently spoke with an official at Washington's Mount Vernon mansion to learn more about the first president's importance. The country celebrates the first commander-in-chief's birthday every year. But for George Washington, it was just another day.
George Washington himself was a relatively humble man and never really one to celebrate his own birthday. Often when he was alone with his family, his journal entries for the day would say things like, "It snowed today. I spent the whole day inside." But as his fame and importance in our country is growing, people naturally wanted to start celebrating his birthday. We know, for example, the soldiers at Valley Forge actually came out to celebrate his birthday.
The renowned leader faced many calls for a third term, but chose to retire. Washington announced his decision in his now famous farewell address.
His farewell address, I think, for us today, highlights national unity. George Washington was seeing in this time period growing sectionalism, especially with political parties. And he wanted us to put that aside, to forget party and think of country first. So I think that's something we should always be remembering, especially this time of year around President's Day.
One of the most enduring aspects of his legacy was his ability to relinquish power and step aside. Washington's farewell address still lives on as part of a special tradition. On his birthday, a senator reads the address in the Senate chamber, alternating parties each year. One of the most important facets of the address spoke of the need for religion.
Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. In vain would that man claim the tribute of patriotism who should labor to subvert these great pillars of human happiness, these firmest props of the duties of men and citizens. The mere politician, equally with the pious man, ought to respect and to cherish them.
Washington fought for religious liberty in the new nation and had several friends from many different faiths, including Catholicism. Religious toleration became a common theme during his presidency.
He believed that everyone should be able to practice the religion of their choosing. And as president of the United States, he was very devoted to that. When he's living in Philadelphia, he's going to different denominations to experience different sorts of services. He's reaching out to religious leaders across the country to make sure that as long as they are good citizens, everyone should be able to practice the religion of their choosing.
Washington's legacy in the United States lives on to this very day. Anyone can visit George Washington's mansion in Mount Vernon, Virginia, just south of Washington, D.C.
Mount Vernon is such a unique place to get to explore George Washington as a man, not just his personal life. You'll get to go through the mansion, again, going under restoration now, hopefully being reopened in the next year in its entirety. And get to see the places where he slept, where he's eating.
Mount Vernon is offering free admission on President's Day and will open the first floor of Washington's mansion to view the ongoing preservation work on February 22nd and 23rd.
And we have a lot more still to come here on this special edition of EWTN News Nightly, including Legacy on the Hill. Discover the influence of George Washington on the U.S. Capitol building. And we take a look at the efforts of the Trump administration to protect religious liberty. Back to this special edition of EWTN News Nightly. As we know, the U.S. Capitol is the seat of the American government, where 435 lawmakers debate and pass legislation that guide the country and affect the lives of all Americans. But it also has deep roots with another branch of government, the executive branch. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales takes a deep look at the connection.
Good evening. On this President's Day, which honors George Washington and all the presidents, the nation's first chief executive played a vital role in the Capitol's construction. He laid the cornerstone for the building on September 18, 1793.
Washington, very smartly, understood the core values of this country, which is that we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people, as Lincoln later said. Which not about one person. And so the principal building for Washington, D.C., the new capital of the country, should be the Capitol, where the Congress convenes, not the White House.
Jane Campbell is the president of the U.S. Capitol Historical Society. She says just like today, the location of the Capitol was a result of a compromise.
And the compromise was that the new federal government would take on the debts from the Revolutionary War, and in exchange, the Capitol would be built right here, nestled between Maryland and Virginia. So at that time, understand that the southern states were more economically powerful with cotton and tobacco, but that economic vitality also rested on slavery.
George Washington's influence is strong. He's honored inside the Capitol in a variety of ways, including on the dome itself.
Both if you look up in the rotunda and you see the apotheosis where George Washington is in effect ascending into heaven with 15 maidens around him, 13 for the colony, one for liberty, one for virtue.
Another is the painting of Washington resigning his commission in December of 1783 as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army.
It was only after he resigned his commission that he was elected president, because then people knew that they could trust him, because the ultimate trust of power is whether you can give up power and whether we have a peaceful transfer.
When construction of the Capitol began in 1793, some in Congress wanted a statue of Washington on top of the dome. But Washington didn't want to be remembered as a king, so an allegorical figure called the Statue of Freedom was picked. She has 13 feathers on her head, representing the original colonies. Another interesting fact, President Abraham Lincoln ordered the dome to be finished even after the divisiveness of the Civil War, as a symbol that this great nation would survive. Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
President Donald Trump's first few weeks in office brought the topic of religious freedom back to the forefront. He announced a new task force dedicated to fighting anti-Christian bias, and he established a new presidential commission on religious liberty. Vice President J.D. Vance also speaks out about religious freedom, which for millions around the globe is not a guarantee like it is here in America. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports.
Speaking recently at the National Prayer Breakfast at the U.S. Capitol, President Donald Trump declares, "We have to bring religion back."
I really believe you can't be happy without religion, without that belief. I really believe it. I just don't see how you can be. So let's bring religion back. Let's bring God back into our lives.
Later, at another prayer breakfast venue, President Trump said the U.S. is a haven of religious freedom, adding,
"My administration is absolutely committed to defending this proud heritage, and I will always protect religious liberty."
Vice President J.D. Vance addressed the International Religious Freedom Summit.
But religious liberty is not simply, as we all know, about legal safeguards. It is also about fostering a culture in which faith can thrive, so that men and women can fully appreciate and respect the God-given rights of their fellow citizens.
And when it comes to regimes overseas attacking the faithful...
And I'd add that part of our Protecting Religious Freedom initiatives means recognizing in our foreign policy the difference between regimes that respect religious freedom and those that do not. The United States must be able to make that distinction. We must be able to look at the catastrophes like the plight of Iraq's Christians over the past three decades, and possess the moral clarity to act when something has gone wrong.
Former Ambassador at Large for International Religious Freedom, Sam Brownback, says the less religious freedom there is, the more conflicts.
When the pilgrims first come to the United States, they come here for religious freedom. You've got a ton of people that move to the United States because they're persecuted for their faith in all sorts of places around the world. So if you get more religious freedom around the world, you get less pressure for people causing them to move.
Dr. Katrina Lanto-Sweat also co-chairs the International Religious Freedom Summit.
Americans should care about religious freedom because it is the foundational human right. It is basically the protection of the right of each of us to live our lives according to the dictates of our own conscience. And if you think about it, most of the other really precious rights that we're more familiar with, freedom of speech, freedom of association, freedom of the press, they all come from this wellspring right of freedom of religion.
Sam Brownback also says religious freedom is the freedom of all freedoms. And he called out authoritarian regimes like China, Nicaragua, and North Korea for persecuting people of faith. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Up next on a special edition of EWTN News Nightly, Journey to the Holy City. We discuss the different presidents who made the trip to visit the Holy Father. Welcome back to the special edition of EWTN News Nightly. Presidents of the United States routinely hold meetings with foreign allies. One of the most significant of those allies is the Holy See. And through the years, several presidents have met with popes to strengthen the bond between the United States and the Vatican. EWTN's Benedict Sittigan has more.
U.S. presidents and popes share a historic relationship. The first diplomatic relations between the United States and the Papal States stretched back to 1848, long before Italy was unified as a nation. On January 4, 1919, President Woodrow Wilson became the first U.S. president to visit the Vatican in the aftermath of World War I. He arrived in a horse-drawn carriage and was met at the Bronze Gate of the city by Pope Benedict XV. Over the years, six popes have welcomed American presidents to the Vatican. Benedict XV, John XXIII, Paul VI, John Paul II, Benedict XVI, and Pope Francis. President John F. Kennedy, the first Catholic president, was received at the Vatican by Pope Paul VI on July 2, 1963. Kennedy was scheduled to meet with Pope John XXIII, but following his sudden passing, Paul VI honored the engagement. The Holy Father later spoke of the encounter, expressing his great hope in establishing contact with the American leader. Protestant Christian President Jimmy Carter had several meetings during his term in office with Pope John Paul II. In June 1980, the Holy Father welcomed President Jimmy Carter to the Vatican, where he urged the United States to remain committed to defending the dignity of all people. The two had met in Washington, D.C. just a few months earlier.
I am very happy to be able to reciprocate the warm welcome I received from you in Washington. The memories of my visit to the White House and of all my other contacts with the people of the United States are stored in my heart.
2 years later, it was a new president heading to the Vatican. President Ronald Reagan and First Lady Nancy traveled to meet with Pope John Paul II, where they discussed growing global tensions amid the Cold War and the dangers of communism.
I have had the great honor and pleasure and benefit of words of wisdom from His Holiness about the problems that concern us all in the world today and about our land. And I've had the great pleasure and hope that goes with it, that he will once again visit the United States.
In more recent history, Pope Benedict XVI met several times with President Barack Obama, often accompanied by First Lady Michelle Obama and their two daughters. Their first encounter took place at the Vatican in July of 2009, where they discussed global policy as well as sensitive topics such as abortion. Following President Donald Trump's election, he visited the Vatican during the first foreign trip of his presidency. In May of 2017, President Trump and First Lady Melania Trump met Pope Francis in a private audience. The Holy Father gifted the president an olive medallion, saying, "I like that you are in union for peace," along with three encyclicals. Once President Joe Biden was sworn in, he became the second Catholic to hold the office. Pope Francis welcomed Biden to the Vatican ahead of the G20 summit in Rome in October 2021. The White House revealed the warm nature of this meeting. There was laughter and a clear rapport between President Biden and Pope Francis. From matters of faith and morality to international peace and diplomacy, these encounters between U.S. presidents and popes continue to shape the dialogue between the Holy See and the United States of America. In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, joining us now to discuss this and more is Dr. Paul Kengor, professor of political science at Grove City College, editor at The American Spectator, and author of the best-selling book, A Pope and a President. Dr. Kengor, great to see you as always. You know, when you look back on the relationship between the White House and the Vatican, which presidents really stand out to you when it comes to their relationship with the Pope?
Well, that's a good question. So the first pope to visit America was Pope Paul VI in 1965. Now, he actually didn't go to the White House. The first one to visit the White House was actually John Paul II, who met Jimmy Carter, met Ronald Reagan. So Paul VI came in during the presidency of LBJ. They actually met at the Waldorf Astoria in New York. Interestingly, Paul VI would go on to have a really good relationship with Richard Nixon, Tracy. I think a lot of people aren't aware of that, but those two were actually very simpatico on foreign policy, even the Cold War. It was an interesting relationship. I'll back up a little bit. I think this will be kind of a surprise to most of your viewers. I think the most interesting kind of relationship here, papal, quote unquote, November 1936, Eugenio Pacelli, Secretary of State for the Vatican, Carmelengo for the Vatican, visited the United States and met with FDR in Hyde Park, New York, and then met in Bronxville, New York, with the young Kennedy family. Now, that future Eugenio Pacelli would be the future Pope Pius XII. So in a way, he was kind of the first pope to visit the United States, but he didn't actually become pope until 3 years later, 1939. But so kind of Pacelli, yeah, sort of first, but other than him, Paul VI would have been the first one.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I know you've written extensively in your book, A Pope and a President, about the relationship between Pope John Paul II and President Reagan. Talk to us more about that.
Yeah, they were very, very close. And I mean, the one thing above all that really bonded them was that they were both almost assassinated within just weeks of each other. In the case of Ronald Reagan, that was March 30th, 1981. He was shot by John Hinckley outside of the Washington Hilton in D.C. And then just 6 weeks after that, on the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima, May 13th, 1981, John Paul II was shot right smack in the middle of St. Peter's Square by Mehmet Ali Asha, and he was struck twice. Ronald Reagan immediately sent him a cablegram saying to him, you know, "I'm one person who understands quite acutely, quite painfully, what you've been through," because Reagan himself had been nearly assassinated. And also at the time, too, Tracy, I mean, it was reported that both men were barely hit. They weren't really injured. They weren't in danger. But in fact, both men were rushed to the hospital, required massive blood transfusions, and very easily could have bled to death. In fact, had that bullet moved over a few centimeters in each case, they probably wouldn't have made it to the hospital. And then when the two of them met together for the first time at the Vatican in June 1982, they both said to each other that they believed that God had spared their lives for the special, specific, providential purpose of coming together to take on and peacefully defeat Soviet communism and win the Cold War, which they did.
Yeah, and speaking of presidents who had assassination attempts, let's talk about our current president, Donald Trump. I know that we've seen in the past and currently a bit of friction between President Trump and Pope Francis. However, I know their meeting actually went really well in May of 2017. Tell us about that, and do you anticipate that they'll meet again during this term?
Yeah, the first meeting went really well. And I mean, at the time, so Trump was inaugurated January 2017, and there was an immediate feeling that, oh, man, if he meets with this pope, they're going to go right at each other, right? They're not going to get along at all. I mean, the pope had made some comments that were critical of Donald Trump on the immigration issue and taking care of your neighbors and so forth. But I wasn't surprised, Tracy, when they both got along really well. I mean, you know, I know people who know both men, and they say that when you meet them in person, right, they're generous, they're gracious, they're friendly, and they both have a reputation for being able to get along with people one-on-one. I mean, we just saw with Donald Trump over the last few months when he got together with Joe Biden after winning the presidency in November, when he sat next to Barack Obama at Jimmy Carter's funeral. I mean, they look like old pals, right? And so when Trump and Pope Francis met at the Vatican in May 2017, it was very nice. And Trump said, I'm very honored to meet you. Melania's Catholic. People forget we have our first Catholic First Lady since Jacqueline Kennedy. You know, she got along very well with the Pope. And I would now expect, too, to answer your other question, Tracy, I would expect them here now, you know, 2025, John Paul II or Pope Francis and Donald Trump to meet again in the not too distant future. And I'd expect them to get along again, frankly.
Yeah, Paul, almost out of time, but final thoughts here before I let you go.
Yeah, so I mean, I would add this. Harry Truman was the first president who really tried to recognize the Vatican. That was in 1951. And that was stopped by Protestants that didn't want the Protestant president recognizing the Vatican. So Reagan became the first to do so, officially recognize the Holy See in 1984. And ever since then, now 40 years and running, there's been an outstanding relationship between the U.S. and the Holy See. And hopefully it will continue because we really ought to be natural allies.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Dr. Paul Kangor, always great to be with you. We appreciate it. God bless.
Same to you, Tracy. Thanks.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night. God bless, and happy President's Day.